Yay. All right, friends and family, we've made it back here together again. I am your host, Rocky, and this is the Complete Sentences Podcast. It really feels like we've been away from each other for a while. I'm not sure if it's just me. A lot's been going on for me these last couple weeks. I got a haircut, and I got a new job. I got a haircut and I got a real job. So that's been taking up a lot of my time. And also it was my birthday. Thanks to everybody for all the birthday wishes. It means a lot to me. I'm going to take every single one of those birthday wishes and pack them away in a nice little box. And then whenever I feel down about myself, that nobody really cares about me, that I suck, I'm going to open up the box and I'm just going to be overwhelmed with warmth and compassion from my friends out there. So thank you so much for all of that. What else we got? Well, today's show, man, we're here on the show. Why don't we talk about today's show a little bit? Today I had the pleasure of sitting down with Chad Thomas Johnston. Chad's a writer, a blogger, an artist, a singer-songwriter, a publicist, a father, a husband, a friend. And to me, just from speaking with him, he seems to me like he's a kindred spirit of mine. Now, I have, in the past, said that to many people, they're kindred spirits, and I've been slapped and been called a pervert for saying that, which I don't really think is perverse in any way, but that just tends to happen to someone that wears their heart on their sleeve, like I do, and like I feel like Chad does as well, which is not a bad thing whatsoever. He shares the same passion for obscure snacks. I think that if Ty was still here, he would also be a kindred spirit of Ty as well. So we'll get into that interview a little bit later in the show. We'll talk about his new book, Nightmarriage. We'll talk about some of his music, which, by the way, I am going to be playing his music all throughout this episode. So any song that you hear is Chad Thomas Johnston, and it can be downloaded for free, guys, on his SoundCloud page. So keep that in mind if you like what you hear.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can count on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents under the tree. Christmas Eve will find me. Love light gleams. I'll be home for Christmas. If only in my dreams.
Is everybody here? All right, great, because class is in session. I just wanted to share with everyone a bit of knowledge that I had acquired over the last week. Let me preface this by saying, I like to lead an active lifestyle, you know? I like to stay fit as much as possible. And I feel like I can get a great workout at home just doing sit-ups, push-ups, pull-ups, running around the apartment complex like a madman. But I recently got a coupon to go to a really mainstream gym, you know, actually do the gym thing, which I've never really done before, except a few here and there times. But I thought, okay, why not? I'll go give it a shot. My lesson for today is whenever you go to a gym, if you're someone like I am, I walk into the gym and people just, they love to come up and give me advice. If you are not looking for this type of advice from people, don't make eye contact with anybody and wear headphones. And if someone starts talking to you, just act like you can't hear them. It really, like, maybe that's just me. Maybe that's just me being unsocial or socially awkward or whatever, man. I know I have my problems, and I'm not blaming anybody for doing anything, but I really hate whenever I can't just go to the gym and get a workout without a bunch of people coming up to me at random parts to try to give me advice. That's really nice of people to do, but that's not what I'm looking for when I go to the gym. In fact, if I go to the gym, I'm probably going to get away from people, you know, like to just get out of this everyday existence that we go through and just kind of, you know, get it all out of my system, listen to some music, and just go there and be done with it, get a great workout and feel great. I don't need a bunch of muscle heads coming up to me and saying, you know, man, you're not getting the best workout you could possibly be. You're not getting the most out of these butterfly curls, you know? If I wanted that kind of advice, I would go to a personal trainer or something along those lines. But I feel like that is something that you get a lot in gyms, man. So my advice for anyone listening right now, if you don't feel comfortable with that type of thing, try working out from home. It's great and it's cheap and you can get an amazing workout and people aren't like looking at you and laughing like they do with me whenever I try to lift heavy weights, especially if there are girls around, you know? Nobody needs that shit. And if you're on the opposite end of the spectrum and you're one of those guys at the gym that goes up to people and always offers assistance, that's great. Like, you're being a good person. But how about instead of just going up to people that are like on the treadmill, listening to their iPod, why don't you just wear a sign around your neck that just says, I can help if anybody has any questions. I do this all the time. I've been here and I live at the gym. Get like a big poster board so you can fit all that information around your neck. And just, you know, do some dumbbell what have yous with that. And then people will know you'll be there for assistance if the people that work there, the actual associates there, are tied up, you will be the next ones that people will come to for advice with this big poster board that you're wearing over your muscle shirt. Okay? So that could be something that could work out fine in the future. And again, this isn't me trying to be like a jerk to anybody, because I understand, like I said, there is a time and a place for that. You know, I'm a firm believer of to everything there's a season. I'm just a certain breed of person that likes to be left alone in some situations, but I'm too polite to say it when people are overly coming at me with advice or criticisms. So let's not forget that this is everybody's world out there. And just because you feel like you need to interject into somebody else's life at some point because your information that you carry is just so amazing, maybe take a step back. In fact, even better yet, I understand that people like to give constructive criticism, which is very helpful, and I'm always open to that whenever I'm looking for it. But why don't we try a game here? An experiment, rather. How about we all try to go one day without criticizing people, even if it is constructive criticism? If somebody says something to you that you feel like, man, I could really improve the way they do this just by telling them this little tip or trick, you know, and, you know, you guys are doing a good job here, but why don't you try to do this next time? Just keep that to yourself and just see how that works. It makes you feel good and it makes people around you feel good. And really, at the end of the day, isn't that what it's all about? I mean, we're all here on this rock in the sky, and we're trying to all feel good, and we're trying to share information. Why always be the guy that has to be right? You know, be wrong once in a while. Let other people be right. I feel like that makes for a better existence, and, you know, let's all do it together. Let's try it out just once, man, before you lived it, you've squandered it. Let's just do it one time together, all right? Good. Class dismissed. All right, everybody. Before we get into this interview with Chad Thomas Johnson, I feel like I have to clarify a couple of things. Okay, first off, I understand that the audio quality is not going to be the best. And whenever you're doing interviews via Skype, this sort of thing happens. It's impossible for me to get all of these people in studio to have great audio quality because they're from all over the world. That's That's the best thing about doing this podcast is I get to talk to independent artists all over the country. Like Chad is calling in from Lawrence, Kansas. Some days Skype wants to work, some days it doesn't. It's perfectly clear, and you can definitely hear what he's saying, but I understand that any audio files out there, it's not going to be the greatest quality, so let's try to overlook that, all right? That's definitely something that I try to strive for, is the best possible audio quality. In fact, I'm getting ahead of myself. There are three guidelines that we live by here at CSP Industries, all right? Number one, excellent customer service. The customer is always right and number one, okay? And I know a lot of you are thinking, man, I didn't even know you guys had customers. Yes, we do have customers, all right? Good. Every listener, I feel like, is a customer, even though they're not paying any money. Excellent customer service, guys, all right? It's number one. Number two, the greatest audio quality available today. That's what we strive for. That's number two. Number three, we try to think of a third thing to be over the top insane about delivering to our listeners. All right, that's our big three. I know that this time there might be a bit of an exception, but it's still. Listen closely, and hopefully in the near future we can actually get Chad in studio. But until then, I just wanted to address this so I wouldn't be bombarded with emails about the quality. So let's enjoy this awesome interview with Chad Thomas Johnston.
I was brushing my teeth and the toothbrush started to sing. Ow! It was a rock and roll toothbrush and rockin' was its favorite thing. But alone on the shelf, it couldn't find its groove. Ow! It needs me to brush my teeth. Brush your teeth with me, rinse your mouth and then repeat. I'd hate to see your pearly whites filled with cavities.
All right, we're back on CSP. We have a very special guest with us today. I'm really excited. He's a writer, he's a musician, he does just about everything. His name is Chad Thomas Johnston. Happy to have you on. How you doing today?
Not too bad, man. I'm enjoying the summer and looking forward to the fall and surviving being a parent. And writing.
Man, that's a lot of stuff to be doing at once.
I know. It's multitasking.
Yeah. Well, you bring up a good point. Before we get into to your career choice here, let's talk a little bit about summer and fall, huh? I guess I'm not the only person that's excited about fall. That's like my favorite time of year.
I always get very, very excited about it, actually. And in Kansas, it's really weird because the temperatures kind of fluctuate from day to day so extremely that you kind of have like really extreme summer temperatures one day and then really, really cool fall temperatures the next day, and they go back and forth, and it's just weird. You sort of feel like your state can't decide what season it really is, and it's weird.
Are you a Halloween guy?
Oh, absolutely. Yes,
my favorite holiday, man.
I love Halloween. Yeah, I love horror films. I watch an overabundance of them every Halloween, and actually during the whole month. I kind of celebrate Halloween all October and kind of drive my wife crazy because I'm always wanting to watch horror films. And now that we have a child, it's sort of like, yeah, I might get to squeeze one in when, you know, the wife and baby are out. But yeah, I still try to watch them when I can, though.
That's a man close to my heart right there. The entire month of October, I spend every day I watch a new horror movie. It's kind of a way to, and I really, like, I love them, and I don't really watch them any other time of the year, just so they're fresh to me in October.
That's awesome. Yeah. What, do you have any favorites? Like top three or anything like that?
Well, I mean, the Nightmare on Elm Street series, even though it gets pretty cheesy towards the end, I can still watch those just as a type of retro factor. That's what I used to watch when I was a kid, so...
Awesome.
Those are
fun. I mean, those are solid in their own right. Like they aren't necessarily, I mean, they are cheesy, but they're also just a really good time to watch.
Oh yeah. Well, and I still think, and it might just be because I was, it was put in front of me at a strange time in my life whenever I was really able to
be morphed into something like whenever I was a child or molded, but I still think that the original Nightmare on Elm Street was one of the scariest movies ever made. And a lot of people, awesome. A lot of people like kind of laugh at me for saying that, you know, like they're like, you know, no, whatever, dude, that movie's not scary at all. But I don't know, it just still terrifies me. I still picture myself being a little toddler watching it.
That's great. Actually, you watched it as a toddler. Oh my goodness. Well, no kidding. That would explain why you might have, you might still find it terrifying. Because I mean, I watched it for the first time when I was actually after I graduated from college. Because I kind of got onto the whole horror film bandwagon kind of late. And I still really like it, actually. I think it's a good little film. And I've only seen the first three out of the series. And I've kind of just been sort of, you know, rationing them out over the course of the, you know, every Halloween, I'm going to watch another one and sort of, you know, experience a new thing.
Yeah.
But definitely, those early films that you watch that sort of traumatize you, those are the ones that sort of endear themselves to you later on, I think. Just because they have that really strange ability to leave an impression like only a movie can in childhood, you know? It's like pretty cool.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened with that one. I was that, and then the TV show Tales from the Crypt. I was pretty much just left to my own devices with whatever I wanted to watch on TV basically growing up, and a lot of those things terrified me, but I couldn't stop watching them.
Well, yeah, it's sort of like the whole rubbernecking, you know, car accident thing where you can't turn away once you see it, and it's too gruesome not to watch.
Right, and it's led to a lot of sleepless nights for me, but...
That's awesome.
So anyways, man, I mean, I'm happy to have you on here. I got got a copy of your book. I love what you've done, man. It's
That's a lot.
Yeah. I got a couple basic questions for you just about the book. Like, first of all, how long did you spend writing this thing? How long does it take to write a book?
That's a really good question, and kind of one that's difficult to answer with that book, because it began as a series of blog posts. I would say back in 2009, shortly after my wife and I got married, I started just kind of writing up these little stories as they kind of happened, because I thought, you know, these are the things that someday I'm going to forget, and if I don't write them down, they're never going to surface again, and they're too funny not to write down, so I have to write them down. So I started writing the stories down then, and over the course of the next, I would say, 2 years or so, I can sort of intermittently put them out. And then last year, I was talking to a friend of mine who is a publisher, and he said he wanted to put out this other book of mine that's still not out yet, that's being edited by an editor up in Seattle at the moment. And I said, okay, well, I've got this project that might be a book, but I don't know if it's something that you're going to want. It's just blog entries right now, and I'm thinking about writing a few more and then just putting them out, but I don't really... You know, like, I don't really have a way to do that. I don't know how to put out a book myself. Of course, then like he's like, yeah, we'll do it. Let's do it. And so he looked at the copy of all the stuff I had and liked it. And then I looked at it and decided that it sort of sucked. And so I went back and I ended up spending the better part of a year sort of rewriting absolutely everything and sort of tightening it down, because I had learned a lot about writing since I originally wrote those pieces. So I kind of went back and just kind of brought them all up to the same level. Quality, and I would say probably the whole thing total took me about a year and a half. If you want to talk about actual invested time, but it took a little while.
Wow, and I mean, what you were talking about, you're like, you didn't really know if you wanted to, somebody wanted to turn it into a book. It seems like to me that's the way a lot of authors are going these days, is books with blog entries. You know?
Yep, that's very true. That's in fact, that's the other book that's yet. Published. That's how that one started as well, and it just sort of evolved into this big, huge project that may never end. But I hope, for my sake, that it does at some point, because it's just this sort of thing that's always lingering overhead. And I think that's the way anything with writing is, that it's this project that never really stops following you around. It's just part of your consciousness, and you can't escape it until it's done. And then you have to promote it once it's out, so then you still can't escape it. So it's, you know, it's one of those things that sort of just haunts you from all sides.
Yeah. Isn't it kind of funny that, like, whenever you're a kid, I'm not sure if there was something that you were wishing, and I'm not sure if you were wishing to write a book whenever you were a kid, but whenever you get older and you finally start doing things like this, it really doesn't seem like it's real, and it really doesn't seem as fulfilling as you had expected it to feel. It's just like, this is just part of my everyday life now.
Well, I think as a kid, I definitely wanted to write. In fact, I did write little tiny little books that I actually bound with Christmas paper and cardboard and I would like pass them like wrapping paper and cardboard, and I would pass them around to my classmates in third and fourth grade, and they would like check them out of my personal library that I had. And so I was always doing that kind of stuff as a kid. And that was sort of a weird little dream that I've always carried with me. And I think, yeah, now that I'm doing it for real and making a little bit of money off of it and pursuing it full time, you know, well, as much as I can, there's really nothing romantic about it, that's for sure. But it is a lot of fun too. It's weird. It's like one of my favorite writers is Flannery O'Connor, and I love her just extremely grotesque and dark depictions of humanity and how funny they are. And I like her description of writing, how she says that the first three fourths of a writing is this torturous thing, and then finally the last quarter, she's finally excited about it, finally happy that she's doing it for me with this book. It was like, yeah, that's pretty true. I remember one point going, oh, this is actually going to end at some point. That's good. I'm really excited about this. But it's still like 4 months before it was done. And that last 4 months was excruciating because I was just constantly working on it. And I kept saying to my wife, like, this is almost done. It's almost done. Like, but you said that yesterday. No, but I meant it yesterday. I meant it today. It's still almost done. But it's probably going to be a few more months. But it's almost done. So I think she just got sick of hearing about it. So, yeah, it's an interesting process that is a lot of work and a lot of insanity too. So,
well, with the second book that you're talking about, that is currently being edited right now, I'm sure is a lot of your original blog entries. Are they still like? Are you still able to pull from that bank into the new book? Or are you kind of getting to the point now where you got to start writing new material just for a book?
Well, I'm actually I write as a regular contributor to Image Journal's blog, and Image Journal is this literary journal that's based up in Seattle, and their stuff, I love writing for them. I love people that I write with there, and the stuff that I'm writing for them currently is my new material that I'm hoping to assemble into another book at some point in the future. So I kind of have a third book on its way, and that one I probably have about 25,000 words or so for that, which is like Nightmarriage is about 35,000. It's not that long as books go, but the stuff that I'm writing for Image is a little different because they're very polished pieces that are, as I consider them, very much done. Once I've turned them in, I'm not going to re-edit them. I don't see the need to do that. But with the Nightmarriage stuff, it was much more loose, much more casual, turn off the cuff. Like, I'd write it in the morning, publish it that day. The stuff that I write for Image takes up to like maybe 8 hours, 10 hours to write over the course of a couple of weeks. And it's something that's a little bit more polished. So that's kind of the new stuff. The stuff that's the book that's unpublished is stuff that I wrote over the course of about a 3 year period before I started writing publicly. And I was sort of just like, reinforcing all my bad writing habits and not really having any sort of input from the outside world about like what I should or shouldn't do as a writer. And so I was just writing this huge, huge thing. It's about three times the size of Nightmarriage. And I started pitching it. I got an agent up in Seattle. And she started pitching it to places. They were all like, wow, this is really overwritten. Like, there's just so much. There's so many ideas. And some of them don't tie together. And then, of course, I was like, but wait, what do you mean? I think it's great. I'm amazing. And of course, then I realized that I had a lot more to learn. And I started writing more publicly and learning that way. And that was sort of a hard way to do it. But
you're like, this is my Dark Tower series. What are you talking about?
Exactly. It was like, this was my big thing. I was like, once I show the world this, they will be amazed because this huge project, and just because something is huge, you know, the Hindenburg was huge and it went down in flames. You know? Right. So like what having a huge project that's really epic and that seems epic to you does not necessarily mean that you have a, you know, a quality thing that is a, you know, that's going to be a classic or something. And I'm not ashamed of it or anything. I just have to do a lot of work on it if I ever hope to actually put it out. And so, I published some pieces from it that could be read online, but it's really huge. It's called the Stained Glass Kaleidoscope, and it's just really, it's epic. That's the only way I know how to describe it, really.
Well, that sounds pretty awesome. And I know that just because, you know, some people say, well, it's too epic to put out, you know, right now, it's too wordy or whatever. There are a lot of people that would be into that. So it's cool that it's still out there.
Well, yeah. And honestly, it's funny that you say that because for a long time, when I would get any kind of negative feedback about it, I would always think, well, you know, there's always going to be people who say things like, I don't like this, or, you know, this guy really, he uses too many words, he's, you know, he uses too many metaphors, it's too colorful, whatever, that's fine, but somebody's going to like it. But then I went back and revisited it myself and decided that I didn't even like it. So I thought, okay, if I'm not satisfied with it, then that's ultimately a problem, because if I can't be satisfied with what I'm doing, you know, it's hard to back. It's sort of hard to champion your own work at that point. So I'm hoping to sort of make it into something that I can be proud of.
Have you ever written something that you thought was really good? I mean, I'm really hard on myself, and I know that whenever I create something, whenever I let it out, to me, it's just, well, this is doable, this is good. But I'm never really like, this is a brilliant piece of art right here.
I don't ever really think of it as a brilliant piece of art, because my writing is too goofy to be art. I think it's just playful. It's like, to me, it's like, it's sort of like a puzzles sort of thing. Like, I'm putting together a huge puzzle of words, and because I have OCD and it's something that's a part of my life, it's therapeutic for me to do that. So whenever I write an essay, it's always like I'm taking all these ingredients that I see in my head and putting them together in this sequence that makes sense to me, that feels right to me, and that it has a certain momentum to it, and a certain propulsion to it. And so that's sort of what I take going into it. So when I get to the end of it, I'm not thinking of it as a work of art. I just think of it as a puzzle that's sort of been solved and that's out in the world that people can read. And that's kind of how I look at each piece that I write. And some of them I know are better than others. But I guess, you know, when you come down to it, you know, you're not always going to turn out like these great pieces of work that are always going to be perfect. And if you try to do that every time, then you're going to end up getting really sort of like artistically constipated, you know, because you're going to always be trying to make this thing that's perfect. And how many times can you do that? You know? So I don't know. I try to be relaxed about it, but I always end up being kind of uptight about it too. So.
Sure. I could see that. So let me see. Well, you said that you write a lot for websites. I guess that's pretty much a steady gig for you. How do you kind of get inspired to write something new whenever you're sitting in front of the computer and you know it has to be done?
I never get inspired sitting in front of the computer. Sitting in front of the computer is like the place where, you know, that's sort of where the grind happens, where, you know, you have to put something out. And so all the ideas come to me when I'm out doing other things. And I use like Evernote. I don't know if you know the app Evernote.
Oh, sure.
I use that to kind of keep track of all my essay ideas. And I have a pretty good list of them now. And I just sort of, I keep a record of things. And basically, whenever I have a deadline, I just sort of look at the list and see which one sounds most exciting to me to write. I just kind of always operate with that philosophy of, like, what do I want to write? What sounds really fun to me? And if it doesn't sound fun, I don't do it. If it doesn't sound like something I actually want to do, I know it's going to be drudgery by the time I put in, like, the last hour on that thing. So I know it has to be something I like, or else it's just sort of like I'm just sabotaging myself from the outset. So That's kind of how it works. But like, you know, that's the inspiration, and I just kind of get inspiration from a wide variety of sources. One of the big things that I've always done is just really kind of immerse myself in culture. I listen to a lot of music. I watch a lot of movies. I read books. I like art. I like all sorts of things, and I kind of just find myself just sort of being inspired by a wide variety of sources, and kind of feeling like I'm sort of like my brain's kind of like a coffee maker that, like, these ideas are sort of percolating and trickling down and into my brain. And at some point, like, these little, I like, it's really weird. I always get this to this point where, like, an idea sort of becomes whole. Like Stephen King in his book on writing talks about how he sort of discovers these completely formed writing ideas. Like, you might uncover a fossil or something like that. And that's kind of how I feel about it, in the sense that it's like this idea that's already formed. It's right there. And I find it and I think, okay, I have to write this up. And if it works, then great. Sometimes I find it like half formed. I have to sort of like feel my way around for the rest of it while I'm writing. And then by the time I'm done, hopefully it's a coherent piece that makes sense. And sometimes I end up getting lost and I just scrap it. But for the most part, that's kind of how it works for me.
Well, and I know what you're talking about there with basically like your brain's like a coffee maker. I almost look at it like whenever I'm watching something or listening to something, I take certain pieces and I'm like, well, I'm going to put this in my quiver for later. You know, I might be able to use something along these lines. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing.
That's true. I relate to that. Definitely. Yeah. That's it.
Well, and for me, I mean, I guess I can kind of relate also with, I've dabbled in songwriting. That was kind of my thing for a while. So I would like build songs on certain ideas and structures. And from what I hear, you're also a singer-songwriter, man. Well, tell me a little bit about that.
And I haven't done a lot of music in recent years. I've only maybe recorded a few songs in the past few years, just because I sort of, when I took up writing in earnest back in like 2007, the late 2007, that's when I started really pursuing it. Around that time, I just kind of realized that if I was going to do that sincerely, it was going to take up most of my free time, which it did. Mm-hmm. And so I haven't really done a lot of songwriting or recording in recent times. And I also kind of got to the point too where I felt like the stuff that I was listening to was much as far above what I was capable of creating myself. And so I kind of felt like, well, what's the use in putting out something that isn't as good as what somebody else is already putting out that I can listen to and enjoy without having to knock myself out to make it. You know, that's kind of where I came from, I guess. Hey, my phone's ringing, man. I'm sorry. Let me just shut it off.
Oh, that's cool. It sounds to me like you were maybe listening to like Led Zeppelin 4 and then you record a song like, why isn't this Stairway to Heaven?
Well, yeah, that's kind of how it feels in a way. Like it wasn't that I just thought my stuff was awful or anything, but I kind of did feel like I got to a point where I couldn't do exactly what I wanted to do in terms of the things that I heard in my head. I wasn't sure how to get there. And I also sort of came to a point where I just wasn't as excited about recording music as I was about writing, which seems kind of weird because I've always had such a really weird and close relationship with music in terms of, you know, sort of informing my development as a person and sort of having a huge influence on how I process my emotions and how I think about, you know, everything in life. So it's kind of weird that I went from that to writing, but I guess I kind of felt like with writing, I felt like I could express more things in a better way, maybe a more complete way than I could through music, because music allows you to sort of explore certain things, but literature for me is you're so broad in terms of your capabilities and the range of things you can express, you can write about. And for me, I felt like music, I was taking it sort of in one direction only, and I kind of felt like it was limiting. So, but yeah, music, I've done music, and I have several things available for download on the web that are free. I have like a 35 song anthology that people can get called Source Material. Actually, what do they even call it? It seems like it's been a while, but Sorcerers and Source Materials or something along those lines. And then I also have a Christmas record that's called Stocking Stuffers, like not stocking stuffers, but stocking, like S-T-A-L-K, stocking stuffers, pull for the stocking in your soul. And that the stocking in that is like the stocking like you wear on your feet. So it's, you know, it's sort of very punny. And the music itself, there's lots of bizarre influences sort of all melded together. There's, you know, Simon and Garfunkel, Mazzy Star, Velvet Underground, Jesus and Mary Chain, Slow Dive, Iron and Wine, all this stuff that I would say sort of, it sort of references musically, all kind of in this big hodgepodge of stuff. And that Christmas record, it's my favorite thing I've ever recorded, which seems a little silly to even say that, but it's true just because I had so much fun making it. So, but it's pretty epic for a Christmas record.
That's awesome that you recorded a Christmas record. I mean, I've recorded about 3 albums worth of material. I've never recorded a Christmas record. Were they all original Christmas tunes, or?
None of them are original, actually. They're all sort of the classic Christmas songs. But they're sort of bizarre takes on them. Like, I'll Be Home for Christmas becomes this song that I just retitled I'll Be Droned for Christmas, because it's just very drony, very stony, drony sort of. I'd say Mazzy Star was the biggest influence on that in terms of their more psychedelic stuff that just sort of drones on and on and on. And I really like that about it. And it's sort of I wanted it to be sort of like this trance inducing experience to listen to it. So it's not your typical version of a Christmas song. And I'd say most of the other songs are along those lines. Of course, there's some that are more reverent in terms of the overall respect. The original song is pretty intact, but you know, a lot of that stuff is, there's still a lot of experimentation and a lot of fun going into it. Definitely had a great time recording it, and I got to play all these instruments, and I got to just make a lot of noises. And I actually found a couple recordings from my childhood of my sister and I singing Christmas songs together when I was like 6 and she was 2. So I found that, and I was able to incorporate some of those recordings and sort of restore them and incorporate them into the record and sample them and do some weird things with them. So there's a lot of stuff going on in it that for me was sort of like this exciting chance to kind of cut things together and make something out of something old and something new, and, you know, all, I kind of cobble it all together into this project. So that's like next to the book, I would say that's probably the project I'm most proud of that I've ever created, actually, is the Christmas record.
Yeah, so. It sounds pretty epic, man. And I mean, we can just download that on ChadThomasJohnston.com, right?
It's actually a Noise Trade. I don't know if you know the site Noise Trade, but Noise Trade is it's a pretty cool site, and a lot of artists are using it now to get their music out. It's sort of based on the Radiohead In Rainbows Pay What You Want model that was sort of popularized by them, and it's a lot of artists are paying to get on the front page of that site to kind of get exposure and get a lot of downloads. And sometimes offering full-length albums and stuff. I've had that album, and I've had all my stuff basically is there, noisetrade.com. And I also curated a compilation in honor of an artist friend of mine who actually contributed to Nightmarriage, whose name is Danny Joe Gibson. And the album that's available on Noise Trade for him is called DJG Was Here, Danny Joe Gibson. DJG Was Here. And it's 35 more songs from all sorts of bands in the region in Kansas City and beyond. Actually, there's a couple bands, like a band from Japan and another band from from England, all sorts of people on that record contributing songs in honor of Danny, because he made so many gig posters for so many years. He's my best guy friend. And I sort of wanted to do this whole PR thing for him and sort of promote one of his gallery shows in Kansas City. So that's another thing that I contributed to. I contributed a song to that, but also curated the record as a whole. We put that out through Noise Trade. I kind of publicized it in Kansas and Missouri and had a lot of fun with it as well. So,
well, yeah, I've never heard of Noise Trade before, but I'm definitely going to check it out.
Well, you should definitely check it out. You can kind of get lost. It's sort of like a rabbit hole that you just kind of disappear down once you get on there, because there's so many albums and bands, and some of it's lame, but that's only as lame as the artist that puts their music up there. I mean, it's there's a lot of really good stuff too. So I've definitely discovered quite a few great records. One that I would recommend that you check out that I recently came across is by a guy named Ben Shive, and his record is called The Cymbal Crashing Clouds, and it's the whole album is free on Noise Trade, and it's very much sort of like a love letter to the Beach Boys and the Beatles, and it's fantastic melodically, and the production is pristine, and it has these string arrangements that are as good as anything that Van Dyke Parks ever did for Brian Wilson, and it's just fantastic. It's a great record, so I'm very excited about that, and I've just actually been corresponding with that guy, with the musician responsible for that, and he actually has a book out that goes with it that you could buy on Amazon, and like it's got like silver embossing on the cover for the title of the book, which is The Cymbal Crashing Clouds again, and it's fantastic. It's a great book, great album. Nice. The album's free.
I'll have to check that out too, man. It sounds like from a lot of references that you have, we have a really similar taste in music, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And then I saw on your website your honorable mention essay in Belle and Sebastian's Right About Love contest.
Yeah, I did get that. I have their record on my wall right next to my desk here, actually, and it's got their autographs on it, and we got one of their little post-it notes from their offices that says "Step into my office, baby" on it, and then it has like "Good job" written on it.
Oh, that's awesome!
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I love Belle and Sebastian, man.
Me too. I'm a definite fiend when it comes to their music. I've loved them for a long time. So yeah.
But so now, real quick, getting back into Nightmarriage here. Have you gotten any blowback from the wife about any of the stories that you put in the book?
Oh no, I made sure that she consented to the entire book being published as is. I let her read it before it went out. She loves the book. She's very excited about it. And I think she's mostly just excited that she's a character in a book, which I think is kind of funny because, like, isn't it really just better to be an actual person than to be a character in a book?
Right.
That's really funny, but she likes being a character in a book. So so she's actually pretty excited about that. And she, of course, tells everybody about it. And I think the stories that are told in the book actually portray her in a pretty favorable way. And I kind of tried to make it so that if I made fun of her, then I made fun of myself too. So that way it's not just this one way, attack. But, I also showed it to some feminist friends of mine and kind of said, hey, read this book. And if it's like, if I'm like a chauvinist pig, like, tell me. So that way I know how to maybe change this a little bit, because I don't want this to be this thing that gets thrown in my face. I want to be able to put this book out and have it appeal to a lot of people while still being true to myself and true to the stories. And so I didn't really have to change much. So like, luckily it was sort of like, it was pretty okay as it was. And my wife didn't make me change any of it really. I mean, there was just certain stories that I've known that I could never write down because she's like, oh, those are our stories. Nobody needs to know that story. Even though it's really funny, like, no. Right. So there's some stories that are not in there, but she's pretty happy with the book as a whole.
One of my favorites was Hearts and Jumper Cables.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Just because my favorite part, and I can relate to it so well, is whenever you call AAA and you're just like, Spark's bad.
Oh, yeah.
Very bad Sparks, tow truck, big tow truck now.
that's pretty much how I feel every time I go to any auto shop. I feel like an idiot every time because I don't know anything about cars. And I try to sort of like, I mean, at least when you go into a car place and you're a man, there's almost like, because there's a certain sexism that's inherent in the auto industry, you almost can just assume that like if you say just the right things, they'll at least think that because you're a man, you might know something about cars.
Sure.
Which is, you know, it's awful that it's that way, but it's also sort of funny that it's that way. So I try to sound like, oh yeah, last time I was in here, the jumper cable, the cables across the exhaust manifold malfunctioned and had to get that fixed. And it wasn't too expensive. I try to sound like I know what I'm talking about. And then they sort of look at me like, oh, okay. I'm hoping that keeps them from, you know, taking advantage of me or whatever. But you never really know. Like last time I went to a car place, I brought my daughter with me and I had this diaper bag over my shoulder. And this guy who was working sort of in the shop in the background, I just see him give me this absolutely awful, dirty look like, what are you doing? Like, what kind of man are you? And I thought it was pretty funny, actually. But you know, it's just kind of funny. It's funny how cars are and how we relate to them and how we use them and how we have to sort of talk about them when we do have to talk about them. Because they're, you know, I feel like they're very mysterious. Like, how does this thing work? I don't really know. I just turn it on and it is, you know?
And then you got a buddy that's just like, he never changes his tires. He never gets his oil changed. And he's just like, oh, who cares, man? It's just a car. And it's like, if I'm going to be driving around in a metal box going like 80 miles an hour, I want to make sure that I maintain it properly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I definitely know that feeling. And if not for my dad instilling in me this sort of almost fear of, you know, making sure that I actually take care of my car, I might be like your friend who, you know, who doesn't really take care of the car, but I sort of feel like I have to. And I have this, you know, this sense of like, yeah, I've got to do it. I've got to do it. And I actually just got a brand new car in the past month. And it's not a brand new car, brand new to me, I guess, but it's 2010 Hyundai Santa Fe. And we just got that. And it was sort of a traumatic thing because I know nothing about cars and I had to try to sound like I was somewhat knowledgeable. And it was just kind of funny trying to get that taken care of.
And about as much as I know about cars is that I put 35 PSI in the tires when I go to fill it up, and then I use unleaded fuel, and then when it's really dark, I can use the high beams. That's about as far as it goes for me.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, I relate to that very much. Like, you put the gas in the hole.
Yeah.
The tires aren't flat, that's good.
But I'll tell you what though, man. If we ever break down or something, I'll get out and look under the hood just to see what's going on. You know?
Yeah. I always look under the hood, but I always think like when I look at it, it's like, no, but really, it looks fine. It should be running. Like it looks like a car engine. Like why isn't it working? And I always feel like the problem should be easy to solve. You know, but it's that's why I say it's sort of mysterious to me. Even though like it's this closed system that functions very precisely and that is actually, you know, you can explain it in very straightforward terms if you are a car technician. For me, I look at it and I think, no, it's this thing that works. It should just work. It should just do its thing. And I'm like that with computers too. Like if it doesn't work, I'm like, no, this is a computer. You press a button, you turn it on, you type, it should work. Why isn't it working?
Right.
So
it's like that it's like that old Seinfeld bit where he says he gets out and looks under the hood and we're always just hoping for a big off and on switch that's switched to off.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's what you hope for. And you hope that everything is that easy to use because you sort of have grown up in a world where things are kind of that easy. Like you turn off, you walk in the room, you turn the flip the light switch, the lights come on, it's that easy.
Yeah.
And so when you're in a car or you're using a computer or something else that's some sort of a more complex piece of technology, your inclination is to think, well, surely, you know, especially after you've driven one that many times, that it really is just as easy as turning the ignition key and you're done, you're on your way. But it's so weird to me sometimes whenever you, like the amount of stress that I incur whenever something goes wrong with technology is just sort of ridiculous. Like I always feel like it's this crazy thing whenever something doesn't work. I find myself really, really stressed out about it. And I think part of that is my OCD and my tendency to sort of like anything that's sort of a violation of what I expect to be, and sort of a sense of, you know, how things should be in my mind. If it doesn't work right, I sort of have this jarring sense of, oh no, oh my gosh, what's going to happen now? And it's always ridiculous, but it's always technology that does it.
So. Oh, I know. I'm pretty similar with that as well. I mean, it can be debilitating. Like, you know, you have a nice, beautiful TV. And then for me right now, I've had a TV in my bedroom for about 5 years, and there's been a little black smudge that appeared on the screen. And I know it's there, you know, and other people might not notice it, but I feel like my TV's ruined now because I know it's there.
I know about that. Actually, I have a TV downstairs that I use for when I treadmill that has, like, if you pause, if you're watching something on Netflix or whatever, and you pause it and the image stays there for longer than a few seconds, this sort of green blotch appears on part of the screen where it's been paused and it's just lingered, and it takes it a while for it to go away. And I bought this TV back in like 2008 or 9, so it's not that old, but it sort of did that early on in its life, which was sort of odd to me, but I've always sort of been really bothered by that. And I felt like I had to point that out to people when they would be over watching TV, like, yeah, if I pause it for too long, this green thing appears. Sorry about that. And they're like, yeah, it's fine, not a big deal. Like, no, but this green thing appears. You don't understand. It's a green thing, and it's bad. Bad green thing, you know. You gotta watch out for it.
Yeah.
So this strikes me as kind of one of the just funny things that you end up talking about as if it's important to somebody.
Now, nobody even really notices it. And at first you're probably like, nobody's even going to notice that. But then you always have to spill the beans. You feel guilty for not telling people about it.
Well, you don't want people to think you're stupid, like you didn't notice it either. Like, yeah, of course this green thing is there. I'm really sorry it's there. And I've tried to fix it. I have, even though I haven't. it's, you know, it just won't go away. I'm really sorry about that. But it's just part of my reality, man. It's part of everyday life for me, you know. So
we're tortured souls, Chad.
Oh yes, absolutely. That's hence the therapy of meds, man. Absolutely. So, but you know, being tortured has its benefits, because then you get to write about stuff later. Your brain, you know, you sort of reap the good benefits of having you know, you come up with material easily later on, because your brain is so active and it's full of so much stuff. Some of it valuable, some of it worthless, but you know, you have writing material. So,
and I feel like it does make for interesting conversation too. I mean, you can talk about things that people overlook, and you can make it into a full conversation and have people look at something a different way.
Well, absolutely. And it's not even like you're really making it into something. It's like, to you, it really is something. It really, you know, there really are certain things, like I'll talk about with my wife, where she will say, like, why do you care about that? Like, we, in fact, there's a grocery store here in Lawrence that's called Checkers. That is sort of this, it's sort of a hilarious place that people always talk about and sort of poke fun at, even though it's also kind of a fun place, and I like going there just because it's so cheap, everything's so cheap. It's kind of like Aldi in the sense that everything's discounted, but it's not quite to that level of discount. But anyway, like, they have this gigantic sign out on the side of the building that says, like, it tells what the sales are, and it would say something like pork spare ribs cryovac. Like, what is a pork spare ribs cryovac? It sounds like it's this, like, yeah, I know it's cryogenically frozen, you know, vacuum sealed pork, but like, to me, seeing it on a sign outside on a building is just really funny. It's like advertising for the, like, a body part of a pig that's been cryogenically frozen, vacuum sealed on the outside of a big building in huge letters. It's just like, that strikes me as really funny. And I was laughing about that, and my wife was just like, that's not funny. It's just advertising pork ribs. And I'm like, no, but like, look at it, pork ribs, cryovac, pack, whatever, and it's huge letters, and it's like this, people are driving by and looking at all these other signs on the street for restaurants and things, and like, you know, other bargains that are on these signs, like, you know, hot dog, 2 for $5, whatever, that's, you know, it's fine, but then pork ribs, sparrow, you know, cryovac, pack, like, I just saw that and thought it was hilarious, and I just kept thinking about it, and I'm like, I'm probably the only person who's thinking about this a lot, and who thinks it's funny, and who sees it as sort of this weird abstraction that only could exist in this world, you know, where you sell parts of a pig at a store and they're cryogenically frozen and vacuum packed, and that's normal, and yeah, it's normal to advertise for them, and people go in and say, oh yes, I saw your sign, I'd like to buy some of those. And so I don't know, I just see weird things, and they hit me in strange ways, and I know that my wife does not process them the same way. And that's, I guess that's part of the fun of being married, is sort of having those different experiences and sort of realizing that you see the world in a unique way and that your spouse does too. They just don't see it like you do. And so just kind of fun.
Well, let me see. And I also wanted to talk a little bit about you recently been on a somewhat of a media tour, correct?
Not really a media tour. No, I've gotten some media exposure for the book. This weekend, the book was in the Kansas City Star. It was in the Lawrence Journal World here in my town where I live. And we've had some other interests as well. And I've sent out copies of the book to people that have been doing that for a while. And I will continue to do that basically for this year. It's kind of a year long marathon process that you just sort of just do. And it's long, but yeah, I wouldn't say it's a media tour. It's just every day I sit down and I work on promoting it to some extent for some period of time and just try to get it out so that people can maybe be exposed to it and hopefully that it will sell a little bit more. Like, I'm not trying to be famous or anything. That's not really my objective. I like knowing that I can do something that might help bring in money for our family and hopefully be able to do more books in the future and be able to do it for the same reason. So it's sort of just a practical thing, but it's something that I love to do and hopefully it can be a livelihood at some point.
Well, you did recently do a book signing.
Yeah, actually, the book signing is this Saturday, actually, here in Lawrence at Signs of Life Bookstore. That's actually coming up. That's my first book signing ever, and I'm really excited about it.
Well, man, I'm excited for you. That's going to be pretty sweet, you know, actually sitting there signing copies of your book.
Although, what I have heard from everybody that I've talked to is that you end up, like, promoting these book signings, and then nobody comes to it, but I have heard from many souls who have said they are going to come, and of those people, I don't know what percentage actually will, but it's nice to at least hear them saying that they're going to come. So
I think it's really good awareness too for the book, because if I was walking through a bookstore and I hadn't heard of Chad Thomas Johnston, well, I mean, my first thought would probably be that you were a serial killer of some type, just because that name kind of has a serial killer type.
No one has ever said that, actually. That's quite funny. Because I use my middle name? Yeah, it's, it is sort of one of those. You're either like a novelist or a filmmaker or a serial killer.
Yeah.
Your middle name.
It's got kind of a Charles Lee Ray, John Wilkes Booth type thing going on.
Oh, yeah.
But,
yeah, totally. That's kind of scary. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah.
But that's not even where I was going with it, though. If I see that you're, if I see that you're sitting there signing copies of your book, my first thought is, well, I can get this book and check it out, and the guy that wrote everything in it is going to sign it and give it to me. Like, I'm definitely going to check that out. That sounds awesome, because I'm like a total sucker for people signing their book and then, you know, giving it to me. I think that's pretty amazing.
It is cool. It is really cool. And I've actually been selling signed copies online as well of the book, and it's I get actually a bigger cut of the percent in terms of the pay if I actually sell directly to people online, although my publisher, you know, makes sure that I sell it at a sort of a marked up rate, so that way it is more expensive to buy it that way.
Sure.
But because they don't want to, like, have me sort of, you know, cut into their profits. But yeah, it is kind of fun. And so I'll like sign the books in the mail. Like, I sign with a silver Sharpie. I needed to have this weird eccentric thing where I could only sign with a silver Sharpie. So I'm doing that. I'm sticking with it. And it's been fun. So I've gone through like 5 or 6 silver Sharpies already. And I just keep signing them, like, personal messages and write and draw these weird things with a silver Sharpie. So it's sort of this cryptic thing, like, silver Sharpie, okay, you know, like, cool. So I'm gonna be doing that this Saturday whenever I'm at the book signing, and hopefully that will be received well and it will be fun for people. And well, fun for me, hopefully, too. So
that's a relief. Mine was signed in silver Sharpie, so it's got to be authentic.
It is, yeah. It was actually me signing it. I don't have enough money to hire, you know, like, child labor to sign it for me. You know, if I did, obviously I would, you know, but I don't. So
maybe that'll be after the third book. You can maybe start affording luxuries like that, like child laborers.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd like to employ a whole, you know, fleet of them in my house. Just to sign books for me in silver Sharpie.
There you go.
Do all my mailings for me so that I don't have to do them and I have more time to be a slob and watch movies with my daughter. That would be awesome.
You'll get there one day, man.
Gosh, I can only hope so. Sounds like such a great height to aspire to.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, it's been an amazing conversation. Before I let you go, I wanted to play a quick game of that or this. I say a game. Really, what it is just a silly question I'm going to ask you and just kind of see which side you take with it. But Yeah, basically one that I kind of was mulling over, and I'm not even really sure which one I would go with myself. If you had to pick one thing to not have to worry about for the rest of your life, would it be you would no longer have to worry about doing your laundry, or no longer have to worry about getting a haircut?
Oh, laundry, by far, because I do a lot of it as a stay-at-home dad.
Yeah?
Oh my goodness, yes. Diapers, mountains of diapers, man. Tons of them. So, yeah, absolutely, laundry, for real. Let's do that.
Yeah, I guess you're right about the laundry part. That would kind of suck. But then again, I don't have a little kid running around.
Well, if you want me to mail you some diapers, I'd be happy to let you in on the experience, because it's a joyous time. It really is.
Well, just sign them with a silver Sharpie so I know that they're from you.
I've been doing that this whole time we've been talking, actually. I was anticipating this part of the conversation. So
signing piles of them. All right.
Signing piles of diapers to you personally.
Cool. Yeah. I'm gonna be that guy in my apartment complex that's getting all the diapers sent to him.
that might creep some people out. And that might actually add to the whole serial killer thing with my name. Like, oh, this guy mails diapers to people. And he has three names. And so, he's gotta be like probably has some bodies in the backyard. And
well, that means that's how you find your next victim, is whenever you get diapers in the mail. You know that Chad Thomas Johnson's coming after you.
Well, I didn't want to let that out to the world, but that is, that's actually how I do it.
Awesome. Absolutely.
So first comes the diapers, then comes death, so that's the order of things.
Well, you can find Chad Thomas Johnston on Twitter at saint_UPID, which I'm sure if that's abbreviated, it just spells stupid.
Yeah, pretty much. And there's people who don't even get that, which is even funnier to me. They're like, well, who is Saint Upid? And actually, Saint Upid actually is a real saint who is the saint of Buffalo. But I prefer for it to be the short form of stupid. I just think it's fun. So
yeah. And then ChadThomasJohnston.com, and then any other place where people can find you.
That's pretty much it. That's everything that I do on the web that is sort of spread out all over the place is sort of aggregated on ChadThomasJohnston.com in some form. So if you want to read my stuff, I have collected writings there outside of Nightmarriage. And I have all sorts of bizarre interviews with people and things, and just music, links to music and everything, all right there.
All right. Well, man, it's really been a pleasure having you on. I'm glad we finally made the time to do it. And
yeah.
I wish you well with the book signing, and I hope that we do it again sometime.
Absolutely. I'm up for it anytime you want. And, I'm sure if I get another book out, especially, I'll be sending it your way. And you can labor through it and come out the other side, survive it, and then, talk to me about it. So
I look forward to it, man.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back right after this.
I like to get where I'm going. All the people I pass, I don't see flowers in the yard. Feel a cradle hard. You will see them as they break up from the ground without a sound, like friends becoming lovers. Oh, just who are we going to be? If I could, I would open up, look into your eyes, become wise about how love grows up from the ground without a sound, like friends becoming lovers. If I could see the going there, I'd probably see you standing where all the things that take time are found, slowly spring like flowers from the ground. I want to be a part of you, to share the same heart as you, but I see it's mystery, like when summer turns to fall up from the ground. Sound like friends becoming lovers. If I I probably see you standing where all the things that take time are found. Slowly spring like flowers from the ground. Your name up from the ground without a sound, like friends becoming lovers. If I could see them going there, I'd probably see you standing where all the things that take time are found. Slowly spring like flowers from the ground. Could see the going. I'd probably see you standing where all the things that take time are found. Slowly spring like flowers from the ground.
Alright guys, that is episode 45. I would like to give a huge thank you to Chad Thomas Johnston for taking the time to speak with us. You can find him at chadthomasjohnston.com. You can also find him on Twitter. The name is Saint, S-A-I-N-T, underscore Upid. So it's kind of like spelling stupid, you bunch of dummies. He is also a regular contributor to Image Journal's Good Letters blog at patheos.com, so check that out. And get his music from chadthomasjohnston.com or SoundCloud/ChadThomasJohnston. You can find more from CSP at CompleteSentencesPod.wordpress.com. You can find us on iTunes, or you can find us on Twitter at TyandRockyK. All right, there. Is that enough to keep you guys busy until we meet again next? I mean, come on. I should hope so. I'm trying to give you guys as much content as possible here to keep you busy with your time until we talk about more boring stuff that I have to say on our next podcast. So, all right, cool. I guess we're all set then. Email us at CompleteSentencesPod@gmail.com, and maybe we'll play it on the show. All right. Later.